Hey everyone, this is episode one of season one, the pilot, I guess you could say. And the reason why I'm calling this podcast Dear Analyst is because I myself used to be an analyst. I still consider myself to be an analyst. And I think when you are an analyst, no matter what industry you're in, I think the characteristics, the skills, the traits that you have carry over into other aspects of your life. And yeah, that's kind of why I called this podcast Dear Analyst. And in this podcast, I plan to talk about a variety of things, mostly first and foremost around data, data analysis, and getting into other realms of maybe programming a little bit. Also a lot about Excel. If you guys know me, I love Excel and using Excel for crunching numbers and crunching data. But I wanted to also make it more broadly about data and how it's impacting your life and work and personal, so on and so forth. And so, yeah, in addition to talking about data, I also wanted to focus on other podcasts that I listen to and provide highlights about some episodes that I listened to recently for each episode. So basically each episode, I'm also going to talk about kind of like do a recap of my favorite podcasts about data and related topics. So the first half ideally will be about just some topic that I'm interested in. And the second half would just be kind of a recap of other podcasts that I've listened to that I think you might find interesting as well, if you are interested in data and analysis. All right, so today, for the first episode, I'm going to talk about something called copy and paste, or more specifically, paste special in Excel. So for those of you who are Excel gurus out there, you may know how to do a regular copy and paste. If you're on Windows, you're doing Control-C and Control-V. On a Mac, you are probably doing Command-C and Command-V, and you're doing a regular copy and paste. This concept is pretty straightforward for most Windows app, most Office applications, whether you're in Word or PowerPoint or Excel, everyone knows how to copy and paste. But when you do a paste special, you're doing some very interesting things with the data. And more specifically, I want to focus on something called paste special values. And I actually wrote a long blog post about this on the Coda blog, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I basically argue that paste special values is an anti-pattern in Excel, meaning that I don't think people should use it or learn it for business critical kind of workflows and applications. And I can talk a little bit more about what I wrote in the blog post, but I'll kind of give you the highlights right here. So again, read the blog post if you want the full background about what I think about paste special values. And I know for those of you who are probably new to Excel or don't know Excel, you're probably wondering why am I even talking about this like stupid little thing called copy and paste? I think it's one of those things where if you are not an analyst, but you slowly learn Excel and you become an analyst, you'll quickly see how powerful paste special is in Excel for handling data. And only after you kind of use it a lot, you kind of see how it's good and how it's bad. And today I'm kind of focusing a little bit more on why it's bad. And it took me a while to kind of come to this conclusion. But I'll walk you through kind of my argument, and hopefully it's coherent and somewhat makes sense. So, excuse me. I think the first thing to note is that when you think about paste special values, or paste special in general, if you Google why should you use paste special values, not a lot of great resources come up. And most articles that show up when you Google why should, quote unquote, why should you use paste special values, they're all about how to do it in Excel, how to copy the data, how to use the paste special menu, so on and so forth. So it's kind of very like step-by-step functionality of how to use the paste special like operation in Excel. But very few blog posts come up about why you should use it in Excel. So there's one article that I came across from this website called DeskBrite, and it gave the closest explanation to why an analyst or anyone would use pay special values. And I'm going to read you a quick paragraph from that website. So here it is from DeskBrite. Pasting as values is an extremely common practice in the business world. Generally, analysts use paste as values on critical data before sending it off to managers for review. This helps ensure that A, the data sent does not unintentionally change if the recipient accidentally modifies source data, and B, the recipient of the spreadsheet does not get distracted by complicated formulas and instead pays attention to the numbers provided. Another explanation from a website called Productivity Portfolio says, there are many reasons for copying formula values. Sometimes you don't want others to know how the result was derived. Other times you just want to make it simpler and faster for users. This is particularly true if your spreadsheet calls external resources or spreadsheets. And if we unpack these two sources really briefly, I think it really boils down to two main things. One, you don't want to make your data you don't want to make your kind of calculations and in your spreadsheets transparent to whoever is like looking at your data. So that seems to be like the number one reason or for the why you would use pay special values. And number two, as kind of like a result of that, is you don't want the data to change after the recipient receives your spreadsheet. So if someone knows the formulas, they can now accidentally change the formulas and it basically causes your spreadsheet to output new values that were not intended. So in general, what this means is, in terms of the general workflow, you have an analyst who's working on a spreadsheet or a model. They're writing a bunch of complicated formulas, and they would pay special values to send a result, kind of a result spreadsheet, to their boss or manager or to someone else, where they don't want to show their calculations. And this might be important if you kind of are, you know, sending a spreadsheet to, let's say, a vendor, and you don't want to show them perhaps like your inner workings of your business. Or number two, again, you don't want the business person or manager to change the formulas, which would change the values that come from your spreadsheet. Now, these few reasons leads to one thing which I don't agree with, which is lack of transparency. And ultimately what this means is, if anyone has questions about the numbers or how the numbers are calculated, they have to go back to you, the numbers person, the numbers guy or gal, and you become the bottleneck for how that thing was calculated. But in an ideal world, the formulas and all the calculation should be transparent so that anyone can audit and see what was the reasoning for writing a formula a certain way. And I think this is, again, an anti-pattern, because we should strive to be transparent with our colleagues, maybe less so for people we do business with, but definitely internally, being able to show your work, I think, goes a long way with just having a more efficient workplace. Now, in terms of like a more tactical and like common sense reason for using pay special values, is when you need to quickly take data from like a database, format it really quickly, sort it, and then put it into a new dashboard that gets copied and pasted into a PowerPoint. Pay special values is your best friend, because you just want to take the values and quickly format them to a certain format that you want in the final output, whether it's a PowerPoint deck or an email. And this becomes really easy to do with pay special values. However, this also results in an anti-pattern, because it's very short. This kind of pattern where you're taking, copy and pasting values just for the sake of formatting, it's an anti-pattern because it's has a very short-term focus on the data. And what I mean by that is, let's say you're doing a daily report, and the daily report, you have a bunch of formulas in your Excel file, and you're copying and pasting values to another Excel file to format the data so it looks nice and pretty in a dashboard with colors and nice font formats and all that kind of stuff. This is a daily report, and you have to do this pay special values every single day. Now, I think this is an extreme example, but most people are probably doing weekly reports or monthly reports, and they're probably like, oh, the pay special value doesn't really mean that much. I can just do it in my sleep because I know how to do it so well, and it's just 1, 2, 3, you know, very easy to do. But that's not a scalable process when you're talking about reports that need to be updated daily, maybe hourly. And now you're relying on someone who has to do something by hand, quote unquote by hand, using pay special values for the purpose of creating a dashboard that should in theory be connected to the raw calculations. And I think people resort to this as a main reason for pay special values because they're just, there's no better way of saying it, but it's just the quickest way of doing something without thinking about the long-term effects. And there's this famous, I wrote this in the blog post, but there's this famous quote from Einstein that says, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, that's the definition of insanity. And I think in this case, when you are copying and pasting special values over and over again for the sake and for the pure purpose of just having a nice, pretty dashboard, I would say the definition of insanity could be something like doing the same thing over and over again and ignoring ways to scale. And I think using pay special values for this example, where you're just trying to make data look pretty in a dashboard, is a really bad pattern, because if you want to change the format of your dashboard or if you want to change the formulas of your underlying data, there's a lot of work to be done. Where in reality, the best situation is where as the data is coming in, you can simply hit refresh on your dashboard and all the formulas and all the outputs are automatically refreshed based on the raw data. And that raw data could come from, another spreadsheet in your workbook, or it could come from maybe like a database that's connected to your Excel file. But there's many ways of doing this. Obviously, it takes a lot more work, but it becomes more scalable when you have dashboards built in Excel that need to be automated and need to be shown to other people in your company or potentially to outside clients or business partners. And so I think I pose three important questions to answer in your data. When in the blog post, I talk about these three questions. So one question is, what systems do I need to use to get data into my spreadsheet? The second question is a spreadsheet the best way to store my data? A lot of people just store millions and millions of rows of data in Excel, and it's actually not a best practice for storing data, and that, I can get to a whole nother episode about storing data. And finally, more importantly, who needs to see my reports, and what's the best way to give or show them the data in an easy to understand visualization? And this is the idea where people are using pay special values to put it into another Excel file to give to their boss or to give to another group within their organization. And is that the best format or best way of sharing data? I would argue no, because you're basically emailing Excel files back and forth, which in my experience is never a best practice because files get lost, there's new versions, just a lot of different things that could happen with sending Excel files via email or even on a shared drive. If you're a Microsoft shop and you're using Teams, just having updated versions of an Excel file could be an issue. And so, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts about copy and paste special values. The key takeaways just not to use it for the sole purposes of one, being more transparent with your data. And then number two is having a scalable way of showing the outputs of your formulas from your Excel files. So, yeah, that's kind of the first topic of the first episode of season one. Hopefully it was interesting. If you're not into Excel, it's probably super boring. But hopefully I can make these topics more relevant for you, no matter what your experience is with data and data analysis. That's the first part of what I hope to be a pattern in all my episodes. And the second part is kind of going through just a bunch of other podcasts and episodes that I listen to that I think will be interesting and relevant for you if you're interested in data analysis, even startups. These are all things that I like to just think about and listen to. And so, the first episode from a podcast I listened to recently, and now it's actually been a few months now, is there's a podcast called This Week in Startups with Jason Calacanis. Hopefully I'm saying his last name right. And this was actually a year-end special episode that he did at the end of 2018. And it was episode 885. It was the year-end special Twist. It's called Twist because it's called This Week in Startups. And he had Nick, I'm going to say the last name wrong, Abuzaid, Lon Harris, Rob May, Sky Pillsbury, and Austin Smith on the episode. And around the 37, so this whole episode was about just wrapping up 2018 and also predicting what's going to happen in 2019 in terms of products. And around minute 37, I forgot who was speaking, but they were talking about basically the future of podcasts. And this kind of got me into thinking about also like what I want to see in future podcasts. And the speaker that was talking was just basically saying, again, download the episode 885, around minute 37 or 32, they're talking about new podcasts that are coming out that are going to be very promising in 2019. And one of them was, I guess the producers for the Slate podcast had shut down the Slate podcast and are moving to a new one. And so I'm definitely checking that podcast out and listening to that to see I used to follow Slate a lot as well. Really curious to see where they're taking that podcast. And then there was another, the woman in the podcast mentioned another episode or another podcast called Fiasco, which was, I think, spun off from another podcast called Slow Burn. And so I'm also going to check out that podcast as well and hopefully maybe review it in a future episode. So, yeah, I mean, just hearing that episode from This Week in Startups really kind of encouraged me and inspired me to want to make my own podcast focus on a very specific niche, as you can tell, which is data. The second highlight from a podcast I listened to was from season 3, episode 10 of the podcast called Acquired. And this podcast is all about companies that are being acquired. And it's run by, I think, some venture capitalists. And this episode was specifically about about Tencent, and more specifically about a product called WeChat. And I'm actually a huge user of WeChat. I use it a lot with some family and friends because it's kind of like the main messaging app that people use in China and parts of Asia. And one aspect about the story of the growth of WeChat, and in case you don't know, WeChat is like, again, billions and billions of users, main messaging platform, and it's become an ecosystem for payments as well. People basically don't carry cash around anymore in China. They just use WeChat Pay as a way to purchase products and food and all that kind of stuff by just scanning QR codes and stuff. Anyways, there was, I think, around minute, like an hour and 13, they talked about how WeChat started using the walkie-talkie feature, which was modeled off of another product called TalkBox, which didn't really grow that well. And I remember downloading WeChat and wondering why so many people use it, and then realized that most people were using it for the walkie-talkie feature. And if you think back to like back in the early 2000s when you first had your Motorola phone, remember the flip phones? And people were using it kind of like a walkie-talkie. You could like just press a button and talk, and then, you know, the other person would hear you. Such a simple concept, but people started using this feature on WeChat in China like crazy. And when I first started using it, I was kind of like, this is really weird because I'm so used to just, you know, texting text with the keyboard on your phone. But in China, being able to type out words and characters, whether you're using Pinyin, which is kind of the way you can spell out characters in Chinese, or if you're actually writing out the characters kind of like a hand draw tool, it's pretty slow and arduous. So I think that's the reason why. I think that's why they talked about the walkie-talkie feature taking off, because you just record a simple snippet of audio and you just send it over to your recipient and they can hear it and they can respond back when they're ready by recording another piece of audio. And it's a quick way to just have a conversation back and forth. And it doesn't require you to obviously type. And that feature basically took off. And I think that was one of the core features that caused WeChat, in my opinion, to really take off. And when I saw it being used with my family and friends, I was like, holy crap, this is so awesome. Still surprised why we don't do it more often in the United States with like WhatsApp or other text messaging apps, but I think part of it's because it's so easy to just like text. I personally use Swipe for texting, but anyway, I thought that was a really interesting feature to call out in that episode about the rise of WeChat. The next podcast recap I want to talk about is in the world of cryptocurrency. Huge cryptocurrency blockchain kind of enthusiast here. And one podcast that is pretty popular in the space is called Unchained by your Laura Shin, I believe is her name. And this episode was episode 98. It was with Mike Novogratz from Galaxy Capital. And interestingly, the title of the podcast was called A Big FU to the System. And the reason why I'm highlighting this episode was more around this notion of hindsight is 2020. And so around minute 18 in the episode, Laura is interviewing Mike about the company he started that is based in the US but is listed on the Canadian Stock Exchange. And for those of you who don't know, Mike Novogratz was an early investor in cryptocurrencies, started a few companies and a fund, I believe, and just very bullish on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other various cryptocurrencies. But due to the crash over the last year or so, obviously, his company has not been doing so well. And when she asked him about, the down, kind of like the bear market of his company in Canada that was listed on the Canadian Exchange, she had asked him, "Do you feel like you made the wrong decision there?" And he responded back, and I thought this was really interesting and really interesting analogy. He basically said, "Had I known what I had I known." If I knew now what I had known then, or something along those lines, basically, if he had the knowledge that he had before, if he knew that the market was going to crash, he obviously would have changed his decisions about starting the company and maybe making all these investments. But he basically said that, in life, you can't just change these decisions. Once you make them, they're set in stone. And the analogy he said that I thought was super funny was he said, after he said that, once you make decisions, you can't really change them. He said it's kind of like marriage, and then just left it at that. And Laura, the host of the podcast, was kind of just taken aback by the analogy and was like, "Okay, let's try to steer this back into cryptocurrency." And I thought that just kind of speaks to the bigger picture of the cryptocurrency markets and how people are trying to invest in cryptocurrencies, where it's basically a big gamble and being able to time the markets, predict the markets, it's basically a crapshoot. So, yeah, I mean, I think this was just an interesting episode, and to hear it from someone who's very prominent in the space, Mike Novogratz, just hearing that analogy was kind of shocking to me, and definitely shocking to the host. All right, the last recap is actually a recap of a recap, and this is getting more into, I guess, the software and development industry. There's a really popular podcast I like to listen to called The Changelog. And in episode 328, it was also kind of like a recap of 2018. It was called The State of the Log, quote unquote. The hosts basically go through the last year and talk about their favorite podcasts, favorite episodes, and what was memorable about them on their own podcast. And there was one, I think around minute 27 in episode 328. They talked about open source and corporate interests in open source. And they basically said one of their most controversial episodes from 2018 was episode 300 with Zed Shah. And it was about corporate interests in open source and dev culture. And I didn't listen to the podcast yet, but I think, if I had to summarize, it seemed like obviously people have very different opinions about corporate interest in open source. And apparently, that episode 300 received the most quote unquote controversial feedback from their listeners. And I'm relatively new to the open source environment and understanding all the different players in this space, but Just hearing them, their tone and speaking about that episode made me think about how open source has evolved over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And, you know, in the spirit of open source, it's supposed to be free software. Anyone can contribute. Anyone can, you know, try to solve bugs and solve issues, so on and so forth. But then when you have large corporations like Microsoft, Google, Amazon taking part in it, is it really open source anymore? Because you have these large corporations influencing and impacting the direction in which these projects are going. And more recently, I was thinking about, and this gets a little bit into the data world, I guess you could say, but Redis is this like kind of really popular open source like project or library. It's related to in-memory data structure store. I think traditionally I've seen it being used as a data store or database. And they basically, I think, changed their open source license, I guess, policy because Amazon, AWS, has been using Redis, or has been, I guess, selling Redis's functionality in the AWS offering. And so in a way, they're basically taking this open source project Redis, packaging it into their different products. I think AWS's product is actually called ElastiCache, which is based on the Redis project. And Redis basically said, this is not cool. We're going to change the rules so that no big providers can basically just sell our technology. But by saying that, they're now basically saying that their project is not necessarily open source. They're obviously, that's what people are saying, I think, on TechCrunch and other technology blogs or what have you. But Redis is arguing that this is actually in line with how many other open source projects are offering their licenses or their projects. Anyways, I think there's a lot more to be said. I think I need to listen to that episode again to kind of understand what was all the controversy about. But I think moves like that from Redis and just having these huge players around that are using open source technologies leads to some interesting dynamics within the broader open source ecosystem, which is why there's so much controversy around this space. Okay, so that wraps up episode one of Dear Analysts. I think I spend more time on the recaps than the actual analyst part of my episode, but you know, we'll see how things go. I just tend to listen to a lot of podcasts, and when I find something interesting, I just mark it and like to talk about it. So yeah, hopefully this was relevant and interesting to you if you are working as an analyst or working with Excel or data. And hopefully I'll have a new, nice and juicy topic for the next episode. And yeah, I'm hoping to do these once a week. So love to get your feedback as I do them. All right, thanks for listening.